that as well. So I will introduce Associate Professor Susan Green, Director of Ngurrungilli Indigenous Programs at the University of New South Wales, a member of AHEA, the Indigenous Higher Education Advisory Council, and also, importantly for this event, a 2005 recipient of the National Neville Bonner Award for Indigenous Teaching. So we're very pleased to have Sue here today.
I'd just like to start off by acknowledging the ancestors and the people whose land we're on, and particularly the Kankanti for her welcome here this morning. I'd also like to acknowledge all of our ancestors and elders that came before us in Indigenous higher education and that forged the path that we're now walking on. And myself, having been very fortunate to have the opportunity to access education, admittedly as an adult, not as a child, having been a state ward and being denied the access to education at that point. For me, education has been a very important tool in my own empowerment and in ensuring that my children and my grandchildren have access to opportunities that should be their birthright. Not saying that we have fully gotten there yet, but I think with each generation things do improve despite the ongoing struggles that we continuously have to have. Which brings me to the point of what I'm here to discuss today, and that's working with Indigenous students and getting it right at the university level. Now, there are many aspects to that, and you know, quite often what happens is that it just gets looked at the support programs within Indigenous units, and that's where it's all got to happen. And I must say that for the most part, Indigenous units have worked very, very hard and have gotten a lot of things right. But we still fall over, and many students do slip through the cracks. And then the blame gets put back onto what Indigenous units are doing, where the deficits are and where we're failing, rather than looking at the whole pictures and saying, well, the Indigenous unit is only one part of the picture, and what happens within the wider institution is where the whole story exists. We're at very early stages, I think, of moving beyond that picture. But as we all know, when we work hard to bring about change, and particularly cultural change in big institutions, there is a backlash. And I think that over the next couple of years, we will see that backlash come through quite strongly. But the thing that we need to remember when we're sitting in the midst of that backlash is that it is part of the process to change, and it wouldn't be happening if we weren't actually doing something right. So while I do believe that the next couple of years is going to be a rocky road, I do believe it's part of the process to getting there, as long as we don't lose any of us along that pathway, which, you know, quite often happens to our people in the periods of change. But what can we do? And yeah, I know I'm putting aside the bigger picture at the moment, but within the unit. Well, one of the things I think we've successfully done over a number of years is to try and move away from that deficit model. And we do that within our own centres. We haven't successfully moved it on from the university culture, but within the units we've done it. And I believe, you know, we do that because we work on, you know, as a social worker, you know, the lovely old theories that we pull out every now and again, is a strength-based perspective. We look at where our students are coming from and the strengths that they come with. Frequently our students arrive at our doors knowing what they can't do, because that is what they've heard all of their life, what they can't do, what they're incapable of, and what their deficits are. And so they come to us with the label disadvantage. And disadvantage is a, yeah, a good term when you're fighting for dollars off the government or through the bureaucracy. But when you put that label disadvantage onto an individual, it actually has quite a crippling effect. But our students arrive at universities with a whole lot of strength and resilience that isn't acknowledged. But in the units, we're able to do that. If we take the time and sit down with the students individually and collectively and look at what they've achieved to this point to be here, and also look at what they do have, and the one thing that every student or every one of us carries, is a capacity to learn. And if you have a capacity to learn, you have the ability to achieve. And once you introduce somebody to the fact that they're not disadvantaged, that they're not incapable, then you've opened up the doorway to success. And all you need to do sometimes is to open that door. For some students, you need to take it a step further. And that is to continuously build up their beliefs in their ability. Because when they walk in the door, it's not just into the doorway with us. They have to deal with other students, the professional and technical staff, and the academical staff of the university, who carry in their minds a deficit model of Indigenous people. Despite the fact that for at least the last 10 years, if not longer, we are constantly being told what a valuable part of the uni we are, we're not really seen as that. The valuable students are the top performing students. The value is the research. Indigenous students, as with every other equity group, is the thing that you have to do at the end of the day. It is your charity. It is your good works. Rather than really valuing what Indigenous people bring to the institution. And so we need to make sure our students know that they are adding a whole lot of value to the institution. Some of the ways that's played out in the past is that our students have been expected to be the teachers. And we have to ensure constantly that that burden doesn't keep being put on our students, because they don't need to also have to teach everybody else as well as do their learning while they're there. It's an unfair thing that is not put on any other group of students besides Indigenous students. It is the responsibility of the institution to ensure that its staff are trained up, and hence the wonderful work that Martin and other people have done on the cultural competency project that is being introduced at the moment. We also have to ensure that our students are not one out within the institution. And while that is being less than what it has been previously, still our students end up becoming quite isolated. A lot of work needs to be put into ensuring that our students go through university within a cohort. Because one of the things that we know, one of the biggest indicators of success for Indigenous students is if they are part of a cohort of other Indigenous students. And so a lot of work has to be put in the very, very early stages of people's university careers, and where possible, before they start their first semester of learning, they need to have built that network. At UNSW, in, well, fortunate in some ways and unfortunate in others, we have two streams of entry. One is through a pre-program, which exists in the areas of law, medicine, social work and business, and another's through the special entry program. What we do know, through looking at what happens to students that come in through both those forms of entry, is the students that come through the pre-program, which is an intensive four-week residential block, actually do much, much better, have a higher retention rate, and have a higher success rate than the students who come in through the interview, one-day interview, and we see you at orientation next week. We do have a third cohort in those who come through the interview process, is that about 60% of them attend the three-day residential orientation, and about 40% of them don't. And we find that the ones who attend the residential orientation actually do much better than those who don't access the orientation. Now, one of the things you could say is, well, maybe it's the student's commitment level or their preparedness because they haven't come to orientation. But we actually think that it's much more than that, because those students who have done the pre-programs and or the orientation camp actually have developed a network. So they are with a group of students who they know. They actually have a familiarisation with the university campus and with the academic staff in the area that they're going within. Gives them the sense that they are not invited onto the university, but they belong, that it's their place and they have a right to be there. For the pre-program students who've had that 4-week intensive session within the faculty, they actually come in knowing more than the non-Indigenous first-year students, and that really gives them a sense of pride as they tell the other students of where to go, how things work, what they need to do, how to read the course outline. So if you give people that feeling that they have not advantage, but they have something that nobody else has, and so they have a sense of belonging to that place, then you give them the confidence of being within that place, and it makes it so much easier to be able to negotiate and engage with the structures that are happening. Celebrating success. We're all really good at celebrating success, but normally we celebrate what we see as big or exceptional. But we need to celebrate every success, no matter how small it is. And success breeds success. So if you wave the flag for every little step, then before you know it, we are talking about the exceptional. We quite often have students who come into the university with what we call in New South Wales a UAI, a University Admissions Index, of less than 20. So they don't actually get a score if you're less than 20. Sometimes we have to fight with the faculties to take this person in. But what we find is by the end of the first year, those students generally tend to be a credit or distinction student once they hit their second year. What makes that happen? Well, what makes it happen is the things that I've just told you. Showing people that they do have the ability. The fact that they've survived the schooling system while being told that they're not capable, that they'll never amount to much, being told university is not for them, which constantly happens to our kids, and we constantly are being told this by our kids, that they've survived that system and yet they're still willing to engage with education, shows a tremendous amount of strength and resilience. We do programs that then show the students that they are capable of learning. We show them that what learning is, or what the university is, it's another language, it's another culture. And seeing that they've already, for the most part, been able to deal with other languages and other cultures, i.e. the dominant culture, then they're more than capable of learning a third, fourth, or fifth, or whatever number culture that they're now engaging with. We talk to them about how for students from the dominant culture, quite often they just know that culture. But our students are coming in with the ability to already know other cultures. They're multilingual, they're multicultural already. You also have to give people relevance for what they're doing. And quite often, what we see with the schooling system is a lot of our kids don't see the point to being there, because there's no outcome at the end of it. But once you show somebody the bigger picture and the relevance for what they're doing, those hard subjects become possible for them. What we have to do is move the concept of deficit from our students and from our academics and our staff within universities to seeing that it is the dominant culture, the university, that has the deficit.
Absolutely.
and that by us being there, it is actually helping dominant culture to overcome their deficit, and that we are value adding. And once you've done those things, you ensure success. Thank you.